Should bring your UBS text next week. Give you another one of those quizzes. Where did we leave off last time? Talking about the ERV.
ASV.
Yeah, well, it's in a cross by Morse
code.
It's right here. Also known as the AV. From that, also known as the RV.
And I said that the ASV promised that they wouldn't publish theirs for 20 years.
So we also have the American version, the ASV, even called the ARV. This is the American edition. This is the British edition. And the differences between the two of them don't really reflect the difference between American English and Britain English. It's more the American committee went further. They put Jehovah in the Old Testament, made some other changes. Question?
What was the reason for withholding for 20 years?
To give the ERV committee 20 years of sales so they wouldn't be in direct competition with them.
Was that a political thing?
Not that I know of. It was merely the fact that they made an agreement with them. They worked with them. The American committee worked with the Great Britain committee. And they just made that agreement. They wouldn't publish, and they published in 1901.
Why did the American committee want their own?
They felt to make different, more changes than the ERV. And no two committees are ever going to agree. And so they decided, since we've gone to all this work and everything else, we'll just put out our own in America. And so as not to compete with them, they held off for 20 years.
That seems like kind of a big conciliatory thing. I mean, that seems pretty big. Basically, throw away their profit for doing all this work.
Yeah, but as soon as the ASV comes out, it's going to be popular in America. In fact, the ASV is more popular in Britain than the ERV. It took a while.
See, what I'm thinking is, was there a is whatever prompted them to do that? See, it's almost like they did it out of the goodness of their hearts, because they wanted.
I think they probably did. Okay, from this comes the RSD. 1946, and the Old Testament in 52.
The RSV. According to Christianity Today, 1983, over 50 million RSVs have been sold. Over 50 million. Some say it's the most popular Bible translation in the U.S. I don't believe that. I know the King James is. ISV is actually lagging in sales. Just because there's so much more on the market. RSV is put out by the National Council of Churches. National Council of Churches. A revision of the ASV. On the committee of the RSV were Goodspeed, who wrote, made a translation. Moffat was the executive secretary. He made a translation. Both Goodspeed and Moffat are very liberal. Albright, he was very liberal. On the conservative side, A.T. Robertson, Southern Baptist, and a commentator named Irwin in the library, conservative. So there was a mixture of liberals and conservatives. There was also a liberal Jew on the New Testament committee. I'm sure they did that in the spirit of ecumenicism. The RSV claimed that the ASV was too literal, too archaic, and also because of the recent papyri discoveries, Chester Beatty papyri. This prompts an examination of the New Testament text, etc., etc., etc. They claimed there was a need for new translation because there was now more textual evidence in the New Testament, etc., and that's just a smokescreen. Westcott and Hort's text is just as good as in 1881 as probably anything since then. The RSV is not a bad translation. In the Old Testament, it isn't as good, but a lot of people have attacked the reviled substandard perversion. But a lot of the arguments are the same type of arguments against the Alexandrian cult, against UBS, against some of these other things, and I see through a lot of those arguments. I don't think those arguments mean a whole lot. However, in reading the RSV myself, I have never liked the tone of the RSV. I don't know why. I've just never liked it. It's hard to put your finger on. But I don't like reading, "The Lord is my shepherd, I have everything I need." Maybe I'm married to the King James, I don't know, but I just have a hard time with these other renderings. So I just haven't liked the RSV, and if I was going to leave the King James, I would go to NAS anyway. I wouldn't go to RSV. So, question.
Where did NAS come
from? NAS is coming up on our chart here. We're coming up to it. Go ahead.
Didn't they keep a lot of the old King James sign things from more popular passages of Scripture?
Yes, they did. The RSV was done by a liberal committee, but when you get down to the translation, it's hard to really pinpoint any specific liberal bias. There are whole books written out on the revised, trying to blast it and all this, and I'm not impressed with a lot of those statements. They're like the same statements on leaving out Christ proves you don't believe in Christ's messiahship in Acts, when that doesn't prove any such thing at all. Go ahead. It's a revision of the RSV, but it was translated from Greek and Hebrew. So, this here is not really a revision of the King James. It's a translation of Soter's text. We gave it revised Greek text. But in a sense, the reason for this was to update this. That's the reason for the translation. The idea is that those reading the King James can now switch to this. That's the purpose. And that's the purpose of this, and that's the purpose of this. By the way, whole denominations read RSV. You know, they have read RSV in place of their King James. New American Standard.
New American Standard. It's from the ASV. 1963.
And the whole Bible in 71. 1963, the whole Bible in 71. Christianity Today in 1983 says 15 million copies have been sold. Christianity Today says, quote, a surprise bestseller. Already sold over 15 million copies. I don't know why it should be a surprise. This thing is an excellent translation. Why is there an NAS? Because the RSV is too liberal, and the ASV is going the way of obscurity, and the committee on the NAS felt that the ASV translation was too good a translation to be left in oblivion, so they have made the new ASV. Called the NAS. New American Standard is nothing more than a new ASV. That's the name. The name means that. NAS is a new American Standard from the American Standard Version of 1901. It attempts to update it, make it current. It's just as accurate as ASV, if not more. And it was done by a conservative committee. Conservative committee. I think the NAS, as far as translations in the King James style, if we're not going to talk about a Rotherham or something, NAS is the top. NAS even gets into the top five in our translation evaluation, or in the top ten at least. Now, ERV is almost out of print. You have to really look to get one of those. ASV, Watchtower prints went up for a couple of bucks. But other than that, there aren't many people that even know what an ASV is. RSV is all over. Loads of people have RSVs. And NAS is popular among conservatives, more serious Bible students, because of its accuracy and so forth. Go ahead.
Do you know when they would have stopped printing the ERV? Or do you think somebody still is?
Somebody still is. I just don't know where.
Because I saw one in a used bookstore.
Yeah, I saw one in a fruit store.
1881 RV. I'd say if you can get one for, you know, $1 to $2, I'd probably buy it. I'm sure it's in print. We have one in the bookstore, but it was something like $15 imported from England or something. I mean, thrift store model is a lot more my way of going on these things. You can get ASVs down at the Goodwill and some other places. You know, not all the time, but they're enough to be around. They print a little tiny edition. Yeah. We have one in the library. What? ASV, Watchtower prints it. Yeah. I don't know. My information here is that the same National Council of Churches got the copyright of the ASV in 1928. So I don't know if the Watchtower Society is paying them royalties. Perhaps they are. Have to look in the front and see who owns copyright. New American Standard is put out by the Lockman Foundation. Founded in 1942 by Lockman. Lockman was a California fruit grower who got saved. Lockman dedicated his whole business to the Lord and said, "If you'll bless my business, Lord, I'll give you 90% and I'll live on a tithe." Well, he became a multimillionaire. And he formed the Lockman Foundation, non-profit foundation, which he gave his 90% to, so it was all tax deductible. In other words, he didn't pay taxes on it, so he was able to shelter that money. And then, from that, the Lockman Foundation paid for the New American Standard Bible, which then they evidently have sold to Zondervan. And Zondervan is publishing it now. Lockman Foundation also put out Amplified Bible. And I don't know what else they have done. They've done supported a number of Christian endeavors. But these two have certainly been a success.
What you're saying is NAS went to Amplified?
Lockman Foundation paid for the New American Standard and paid for or financed the Amplified. I assume some of the same men probably did both, but it wasn't the same committee per se. They're just completely different endeavors. But Lockman, Lockman's dead. He's passed on, but his foundation goes on with a certain amount of money, and they do different projects for the Christian church.
But the reason I ask is I was just reading the Amplified the other day, and in Genesis 1:26 and 1:27 it says, "Let us," in parentheses, "it has Father, Son, and Holy Ghost."
Mm-hmm. Well, right, the Lockman Foundation was Trinitarian. And so Amplified has expanded the passages all over the Bible in some ways theologically. I would consider that highly interpretive. Nothing in the Hebrew on that one. Usually Amplified is bringing out more of the richness of the language and not giving us a theological, you know, definition there. NIV has God the Son, John 1:18, the only begotten God the Son. From the variant, only begotten Son, only begotten God, they just have them both in there. It's kind of a neat way to do it. New American Standard has excellent cross-references. If you've ever used them, you'll notice they're really quite good. All around New American Standard, I rated a very excellent translation. There was a move some time ago to move our Bible college to NAS. Pastor nixed that. And I really don't have an opinion myself. I probably prefer the traditional old King James. There was a move some time ago to move our grading system from A, B, C, D to 1, 2, 3, 4. And I definitely was against that. But, you know, there's these movements every now and then to do something. And so there was a movement to change our Bible college to NAS and get everybody reading NAS. There have been a lot of movements around here, so the pastor is usually kiboshing them. Two minus. Yeah. Two minus. Anyway, NAS is an excellent Bible. A lot of people read it. I don't mind if people have it in class, but I think we should probably stick to the King James, just for a traditional sake and because of familiarity's sake. Another translation.
NEB. Yep. NEB. They claim it's a new translation, it's not a revision. But I think the NEB is a counterpart to the RSV.
The New English Bible. It's kind of a new ERV. 1961, Complete Bible 1970. Plans were laid in 1946, the year the RSV was published in the U.S. NEB was planned and directed by a whole group of denominations in Great Britain, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, etc. NEB is said to have sold 12 million copies in 1983. New English Bible says new translation, not a revision. However, I happen to know the whole thing, it fits in this scheme. But NEB is totally different than the others. It's not in the King James style, and it's more in the Phillips or Living Bible style. So it's pretty interesting. The director was C.H. Dodd, D-O-D-D, supposedly the most distinguished scholar in Britain, and he's a real liberal. He's a real liberal. NEB is real interesting. It omits Jesus from Matthew 1:18, following no Greek manuscript, but instead an old Latin Syriac and Vulgate. Omits Jesus in Matthew 1:18. It omits all of Matthew 9:34, following manuscript D, three lectionaries, and a Syriac manuscript. In Matthew 9:34, it omits that verse, following manuscript D, three lectionaries, and a Syriac. Matthew 8:26, it follows no known Greek manuscript. So NEB changed the text, and they used some peculiar textual principles. So Matthew 8:26, they follow no known Greek manuscript. They omit Jesus from Matthew 1:18, and that is no Greek manuscript omits Jesus there. They followed an old Latin and a Syriac version for that. They did some peculiar things. Now, to show you the type of translation we're talking about for NEB, slang, Mark 5:14, they took to their heels. Acts 14:6, they got wind of it. Luke 10:40, tell her to come and lend a hand. Second Corinthians 11:9, I sponged on no one. Luke 16:15, God sees right through you. 1 Timothy 3:8, money grabbing. 1 Timothy 3:8, money grabbing. Luke 15:14, he began to feel the pinch. Numbers 16:14, do you think you can hoodwink men like us? 1 Timothy 6:4, I call him a Pompeius ignoramus. 1 Timothy 6:4. Exodus 11:1, he'll send you packing. Genesis 11:1, once upon a time. Once upon a time. John 6:60, this is more than we can stomach. Now, after putting out those slang phrases, listen to these words. Revelation 17:4, be bedizened with gold. Hebrews 1:3, the purgation of sins. 1 Timothy 4:1, inculcate abstinence. Contumely, batten, lackeys, runnels, feints, abettor, miscreant, ague, gaff, panners, balk, wreck, swill, interlopers, recalcitrant, lodical, cosmic, parasites, matricides, atrophied, assize, midge. They go from slang to some of the strangest words I've ever heard. I would have to get a dictionary out to look to find out what a lot of those mean. NEB then, done by a liberal committee, much more liberal than RSV, quite different than the King James. Then the last one that goes way down at the bottom here is the NIV. NIV, New International Version. 1973, New Testament. Old Testament, 1978. The New International Version is said to not be a revision. Not be a revision. But it is an attempt to replace the King James. It's an attempt to unite the church world. Let me read from this flyer. It was a confusing time. The church was in a ferment. The fact that there was a babel of Bibles, a multitude of different translations, didn't help. So add one more. None of the Bibles really were in the common language of the people. None had won general acceptance by all Christians for use in all circumstances. Church liturgies, private devotions, family reading. There seemed to be different Bibles for each of these purposes. So, NIV is an attempt to give us one version for every purpose. New York Bible Society financed it, $2.25 million. $2.25 million. 7 years in the making. Now, how could it only cost $2.25 million? Because there was a lot of volunteer scholarship on it. A panel of 115 scholars. These are men in various universities across the country and into Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and England. Men from Baptist, Brethren, Church of Christ, Mennonite, Methodist, Episcopalian, Lutheran, Nazarene, Presbyterian, Reformed Church, and even Pentecostal Church. This is a fundamental ecumenical group, not a liberal ecumenical group. And it's an attempt to unite the church under one translation. The work took place in some 25 places around the world. In 1982, 6 million copies sold. I'm sure that there's many more than that. This is one of the latest translations. The story of the NIV. The need for an up-to-date, faithful translation of the Scriptures was felt as early as the mid-50s. Now, it's interesting that the need was felt in the mid-50s, and translations are coming out about one every 2 years. They're constantly coming out. And yet none of those are even noticed by these people. So anyway, they talk about everything here. A lot of the men on the committee are men that have written books in our library. Well, Gleason L. Archer, he's pretty famous. Gabeline, Harrison, many others that I don't read their names. Merrill C. Tenney, some of you have heard of him. Introduction to the New Testament. A distinctive feature of the NIV is the trans-denominational nature of its participants. Of course, that helps sales, don't you know? Let's see if I've got anything I want to read on that. I guess I don't have anything. NIV spent a lot of time on readability. They had language experts check it out. The Children's New Testament reads at a third grade level. The NIV reads at a seventh grade level. NAS reads at a 12th grade level. And so the fact that they were able to translate this down to a seventh grade level is a real mark of their endeavor to keep this thing very readable, very understandable. NIV, to me, sounds a lot like the RSV. That's, you know, kind of a summary statement. It sounds a lot like the RSV. It's more readable than the RSV, fairly accurate, doesn't have any major doctrinal bombs in it or anything. It isn't as accurate as NAS, though, but it's pretty good. It's good for kids. Because it's real readable. And I think we use it in a Christian school. I recommend it. I don't see any negative to it. Very few kids are picking up on Greek prepositions anyway. So I don't think they're going to miss a whole lot there. That's pretty much the end of this tree I've been building on major revisions of the King James that have encompassed whole denominations trying to replace the King James and all of that. Let me just talk about some other translations done by famous men. 1798, Nathaniel Scarlett made a translation. He's a famous author. Nathaniel Scarlett. The reason the King James was obsolete. That was said in 1798. In 1768, John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, revised the King James and made a translation. 1768. In 1833, Noah Webster made a translation, a King James with language amendments. 1833. Noah Webster, the author of the English Dictionary. 1862, we find Young's Literal translation coming out. New Testament, 1862, Old Testament, 1875. This was done by Robert Young, the author of Young's Concordance. He was the author of a number of different works. He read Hebrew, Sanskrit, Greek, Latin, Arabic, Chaldee, Ethiopic, Amharic, Samaritan, Maltese, Syriac, Coptic, Gujarati. He even wrote grammars in some of these other languages. His translation is especially good in the Old Testament. And the New Testament is not as literal as maybe Rotherham or Concordant. But in the Old Testament, it's very literal. Young griped about the inconsistency of the King James. And because of that, felt to produce a literal translation that would be of great help to scholars. Young's translation is basically from the TR. Although he himself did textual work, was not at all affixed to the TR, he merely translated it, but he did textual work, And I have a Young's literal translation that in place of 1 John 5:7, he leaves out verses 6, 7, and 8. And in a footnote, he says, not in the best manuscripts, and give general textual knowledge. There's a paperback by Bethany Press in the library of Young's Concordance that's a photograph of mine. Page numbers match. Everything matches except that area. They took out the footnote and they put in verses 6, 7, and 8. So, very peculiar. Another translation by Henry Alford, 1869. Besides making his Greek text, his Greek commentary, he made a translation of the New Testament. Said to be a revision of the King James. Revision of the King James. Then there was a translation done by Fenton Farrar. New Testament, 1885. Old Testament, 1903. Fenton Farrar. He was a wealthy Englishman. Studied Greek and Hebrew. He recognized that anybody doing any translating was highly influenced by the King James. Even to try to translate out of the book of John, the King James rings in your ear. It's so hard to get away from it. So Farrar only read Greek and Hebrew for years. Refused to read any English English translation, hoping to forget all of them that he had read. So then he went to translate, he wouldn't be biased by anything already there. Farrar is a real eccentric. He produced all kinds of strange translations. 1 Corinthians 4:12, he talks about the gift of tongues is genius for languages. Interpretation for tongues is ability to translate such languages. Prophecy is preaching. The gift of helps is nursing, because it follows the gift of healing. You find healing, helps, etc., etc. So he has ability to heal diseases, nursing, and it goes on. He's a real peculiar bird. Has a lot of strange translations. His translation is quite poor. But he himself was very popular among the public, and he's one of the first modern speech paraphrase type translations. Those are always popular. The worst translations are always the most popular. The best have very little sales. NAS is an exception to that. Another translation by famous men. 1899, W.B. Godbey, G-O-D-B-E-Y. Godbey was a fundamental Bible expositor in the Holiness Movement, down in the southeast states, Louisiana, around in there. He was a tent preacher. When Godbey was a Bible student, somebody gave him a copy of Manuscript Aleph. And, you know, can you imagine Manuscript Aleph in unseals? Unseal Greek, you know, what do you do with that? Well, being a Bible student and studying Greek and so forth, he learned how to read Manuscript Aleph. And before long, he threw away his King James, and all he did, he taught the rest of his life out of Manuscript Aleph. Whenever he preached or referred to anything, he taught out of it. Well, towards the end of his life, there was clamor that he make an English translation, since it was obvious he was very good at Greek. Thus he did, called the Godbey translation. And of course, he translated Manuscript Aleph. Remember, it's the complete New Testament, so he just translated it. Godbey's translation is very accurate, though. He was a good scholar, and he translated it accurately. He arranged the Gospels in a harmony, makes them difficult to use. He has a lot of good renderings. Unfortunately, he had some peculiar doctrines. He didn't believe in water baptism, and he fought against tongues when that came into his day, because tongues did sweep through those early tent revivalists and the holiness movement back at that time, and they either accepted or rejected it. It really sprang up amongst them. That's where it came from. He had a long life with the public, and I have a book of his autobiography called Happy Nonagenarian. A nonagenarian is somebody that lives to be 90 years old. And he wrote in his 90s his autobiography. Real interesting fellow. Another translation of note is John Darby. John Darby, one of the Brethren leaders. New Testament, 1871. Old Testament, 1890. You can see there's loads of good translations available that have been before ERV or ASV or any of these. Darby's translation is very excellent. Darby also translated into German and French. Some say that he translated into Swiss as well, since there is an unknown translation in Swiss that no one's ever identified, and they say it's Darby, done by Darby. But we know that he translated into German and French. And his English translation is very excellent. We could assume the same about the others. Quote, to provide the unlearned reader with as exact a translation as possible. He's shooting for as an exact a translation as possible. Darby did textual work. I don't know what text he followed, but he lists a number of them in his footnotes, so maybe he followed an eclectic text or whatever. His translation is in the King James style. It has no slang or, you know, modern speech things like NEB does. Then, moving into a new section, so much for translations by famous men. Modern speech translations. Farrar Fenton had to be about the first, although let me reach way back to 1768. Edward Harwood. Edward Harwood put out a liberal translation of the New Testament. Reading Matthew 13:51-52. Every teacher of Christianity ought to study the precepts and doctrines with such sedulous application and industry that he, like a careful and provident master of a large family, may lay up a rich and inexhaustible fund of useful knowledge, and may upon every occasion be always able, from a mind replete with wisdom, to administer an ample and salutary repast for the consolation and benefit of mankind in every various state and condition. Now he's got a real modern speech and he's very verbose. Then I will say to my soul, distinguished is thy felicity. Well, Fenton did a lot of that. A lot of slang, a lot of bringing things out. Moving into our century, there's been a progression of modern speech, from modern speech to paraphrase. First is 1901, the 20th century New Testament. 20th century New Testament, probably named after the turn of the century. Done by 20 men and women. Started out by a congregational minister's wife whose children couldn't understand the King James. She was joined by a railroad engineer and a Greek student. They formed a committee. In 1961, Moody Press thought this version so useful that it republished it. The members of the committee never met. They corresponded only by mail and spent 14 years translating. Their ages ranged from 19 to 63. About half were ministers or ex-ministers. And they were of different denominations. 20th century is an inaccurate paraphrase of everyday English. Then Weymouth, 1903. Richard Francis Weymouth. T. teacher of ministers Greek. He's the author of the resultant Greek Testament. Now, the resultant Greek Testament was a collation of texts, not manuscripts. He took Lachmann's text, Tischendorf, Tregelles, Westcuttenhort, Revisers, Alford, with Stephanus, Complutensian, Erasmus, and Elzevir, and from all of those he produced his own text, called the resultant, or the result of all that, the resultant Greek New Testament. Well, you guessed it, his New Testament is a translation of his own text. Weymouth used everyday English, a free translation. Very popular in those days, because these modern speech translations were popular when you had nothing else really to read other than the King James and so forth. Better than the 20th century, Weymouth himself was a Baptist. Luke 15:25, the elder son was out on the farm. That's down to earth. Mark 3:20, he had no opportunity even to snatch a meal. So, you know, it gives you the flavor of their kind of saying things in a real slangy type way.
When was
this? 1903. Next, the New Testament in 1913 by James Moffat. 1913, Moffat, New Testament, Old Testament, 1924. James Moffat is a theologian of the Free Church of Scotland. He admits being a modernist. He was later the executive secretary of the RSV. He uses a lot of paraphrase in his translation, and his translation was very popular in the 20s and 30s. He amended the Masoretic text and starts the Old Testament with Genesis 2:4. He also rearranges the book of John, feeling that things are out of place. He translates Yahweh as the Eternal. The Eternal. In 1 Peter 3:19, he says Enoch went and preached to the spirits in prison instead of Christ, because he believed Peter quoted the book of Enoch and misquoted it. So he changed the quote to what it should be out of the book of Enoch. Moffat is a liberal. He took liberties to change what he felt was wrong. Following him was Goodspeed. New Testament 1923, Old Testament 1927. Goodspeed is an American translation. The idea here is to translate it in more American English than the British English of, let's say, Weymouth, Moffat, and the others, who are all from Great Britain, and Moffat being from Scotland. Goodspeed was a Bible scholar and a Greek teacher at Chicago University. He also worked on the RSV. Goodspeed, an example of his paraphrase is Acts 8:28. The eunuch was sitting in his car. Well, kind of lose the ancient scene there. But that's what I call being free. He does a lot of other things. He also, in 1 Peter 3:19, puts Enoch instead of Christ. Yes, C-A-R. You know what a car is. The eunuch was sitting in his car. I don't know. I just know that Goodspeed has just made things, you know, more modern, so that you get the idea.
There's not even a modern translation now that says that.
No, they've gone back to Chariot. I don't know why he did this. Okay.
1927, there wasn't too many on the road.
a sedan chair, those kind they used to carry. Maybe if we looked up the word car, we might come up with that definition. Certainly, though, to anybody reading that, he's going to get a completely different. Next, taking even more liberty, was J.B. Phillips. Letters to young churches, he began to put them out as early as 1947. What prompted Phillips to complete the New Testament in 1958, completed in 1958, was the interest and encouragement of C.S. Lewis. Many people have heard of C.S. Lewis. Phillips was a vicar in the Church of England. During World War II, he used to go down and witness and share the gospel with the soldiers, and he found they couldn't understand the King James. Now, I don't know why he didn't use Weymouth, Moffat, Goodspeed, 20th Century, Fenton, or any of the other translations. But in them not understanding the King James, he decided to make his own translation. He doesn't believe the Bible's inspired either. Quote, Paul, for instance, writing in haste to some of his wayward and difficult Christians, was not tremendously concerned about dotting the I's and crossing the T's of his message. I doubt very much whether he was even concerned about being completely consistent with what he had already written. Consequently, it seems to me quite beside the point to study his writings microscopically. If it's not presumptuous to say so, I attempted as far as I could to think myself into the heart and mind of Paul. This is why consistency and meticulous accuracy have sometimes both been sacrificed in the attempt to transmit freshness and life across the centuries. Well, Romans 16:16, salute one another with a holy kiss, give one another a hearty handshake, all around for my sake. Galatians 5:16, here's my advice, live your whole life in the Spirit. It makes it sound, you know, so much less than what's really being said. 1 Corinthians 15:29, baptized for the dead by proxy. Well, there is a theological argument in 1 Corinthians 15:29 about baptism for the dead. What does that mean? And there are those that do use that verse to say you can get baptized in place of some dead person, which doesn't sound the way God works, because once you're gone, you're gone, you know. But so he's translated it, baptized for the dead by proxy. That's very strange. Mormons do. James 2:16, good luck to you. Another passage, a man under the influence of some evil spirit. He yelled at the top of his voice, hi. What have you got to do with us, Jesus, you Nazarene? Have you come to kill us? Jesus cut him short. Be quiet. Get out of him. Matthew 5:29. Thrown under the rubbish heap for Gehenna. Matthew 5:5, the meek are happy those who claim nothing. Matthew 5:6, righteousness, hunger and thirst for goodness. And the peacemakers are the utterly sincere. In spite of all the slang, he also has the entail of sin and death, magnificent denouement, palpable frauds, invidious distinctions, dilatory, serried ranks of witnesses. These are some big words as well. After Phillips, we have Good News for Modern Man, or TEV, Today's English Version. Let's see, do I have a New Testament date here? I guess I don't. I think it was 66. Old Testament in 77. 66, oh yes, published September 1966 by Dr. Robert Bradger, Southern Baptist working for the American Bible Society. The Good News Bible available today has sold 15 million copies, along with 65 million New Testaments. That was said in 1983. 65 million New Testaments. Of course, when they sell them for 35 cents each and give a lot of them away, you can be sure they're going to be popular. Good News is a modern speech paraphrase with a certain amount of slang. Interestingly enough, it comes from UBS, but one author found 17 passages found in the footnotes of UBS. It even has the angel stirring the waters in John 5. Following Good News, by the way, I have a book at home called Bad News for Modern Man, a critique on the Good News. There are those that object to Good News and feel like it's perverted and corrupted the gospel. But I have a good friend that got a Good News when he was in jail and got saved. So Good News has a purpose. Good News was done for people of limited English and for the mission field. That's the purpose of it. It was done to meet the need of non-Christians and those of low education. That's what it says in the introduction. To meet the need of non-Christians, those of low education. So something modern that others can maybe read and understand who would have trouble with the King James. Let's take a 5-minute break and we'll keep talking about translations.